Only four new episodes of Dawson's are left. Wednesday, Joey and Eddie's love has survived some very rough times. Now Joey's forced to choose. Go away with him.
Nobody said we have to go tomorrow.
I do.
Or lose him forever. Dawson's Creek.
Speak, a podcast about Dawson's Creek. I'm Tracy.
And this is Charles.
And welcome to the beginning of the end. I mean, we've been beginning the end for a while now, but it just feels, I guess now that we're like officially really into February, we like, Charles and I planned out the schedule for the rest of this series. Like, it just kind of feels like we are really getting to the end. I don't know. It feels real now.
Tracy and I had a lunch meeting. It was very professional. I only had one boba tea.
Yes, it was very professional. We planned out everything we're going to do. And yeah, it's like, it's weird. It just feels weird.
It feels like the end has been beginning for this entire season because it's the last season. But a lot of things happen. Well, a lot of things end this episode. And that kind of like puts a timer on it.
Yeah, a lot of things do end, including, as I had mentioned to you a couple episodes ago, we get a series wrap on, like, five characters. Now, granted, I think, like, one or two of those characters are a little bit minor, but we'll talk about it as we get into this episode. This is 620, Catch 22. Charles, last week you said you still didn't fully know what Catch 22 was, and you would be mad if it was Joey reading Catch 22 in Hedson's class, which is exactly what it was.
I mean, I'll take that prediction as a win, and I'm glad at least it wasn't like the entire episode, and Hedson didn't do very much lecturing about the book, but I still have no idea what a Catch-22 is.
Were you half expecting Joey to be narrating this episode?
That would not have surprised me. If she had narrated about her facing a Catch-22, that would have made plenty of sense.
A Catch-22 is basically like, there's no good solution in a problem. Like, every choice, it's like bad.
It's like a rock and a hard place situation,
basically,
right?
Yeah, and you kind of see that in like a lot of the characters this episode.
Okay, here's my problem with that. I think a lot of their problems are dumb.
Well, yeah, of course you do, because you've been annoyed with them for the last few episodes.
So I feel like we're not really, I feel like they're not really facing Catch-22s because they're problems of their own creation. But, you know, maybe that's fine. Maybe that's fine. I haven't read the book.
Is that not, like, a commentary on humanity that all of the problems we face are of our own doing, at least most of them?
Yeah. Stop rolling rocks up hills, people.
Before we jump into 620... Charles.
Yes.
I don't have any links or anything to talk about. Screen Rant has not gifted us with another list. However, not that anyone from who programs Google Alerts is listening to this, but maybe this isn't a commentary on Google Alerts. This is a commentary more on the media. I have a Google Alerts for Dawson's Creek, right?
Uh-huh.
And oftentimes, almost daily, there's a Katie Holmes update, right? But the reason why I never include them is because they are 9 out of 10 times, lately it's been 10 out of 10 times, anytime Katie Holmes comes up in the news, it's because of what she's wearing, because she walked outside in New York without makeup on. Like, some of the headlines are just so, not want to say crazy, because I guess this is how society talks about women, but it's just like, the update the other day was like, Katie Holmes like walks outside in ripped jeans or something. It was just I don't know, it was like an Us Weekly thing or something. It was frustrating to me because I'm like, I'm sure Katie Holmes is working on things, you know, she's got a career, she's got many things going on in her life, but all we hear about are her ripped jeans and makeupless face.
Let Katie Holmes wear pants in peace. Aren't ripped jeans like popular again? I'm seeing them like everywhere now.
Yeah, but I that's why I don't, I think someone had asked once, like, because I'll also talk about updates when it comes to, like, Joshua Jackson or Michelle Williams. And someone emailed and said, what's Katie Holmes up to? And, like, honestly, every Google alert I've gotten has just been, like, tabloidy stuff. And, yeah, we're not about that here at Dawson Speak, a podcast about Dawson's Creek. Well, sometimes we are.
Oh, give me a second to change my Paula Cole fact.
Oh no.
I'm kidding.
I was just asking Charles as I was looking at our notes that we have. We should have a Google Doc where we make some notes before we record. And there was no Paula Colfax listed. And he says there's a news update. So I'm going to leave you, listener, in a little bit more suspense while I go through our usual plugs. Actually, before we go through our usual plugs, we got some comments to talk about from DawsonSpeak.com, Charles.
Ooh.
So we got a comment from Kate who said, this is a response to Love Lines. Now, as you and I remember, or perhaps we have blacked it out from our brain, Love Lines happened. That was the last episode we talked about. And Kate writes, I'm sorry for Charles. I have never rewatched Love Lines. I sat through it once, but never again. I would prefer Charles's version too. And she's referring to the version you wrote on the blog post for last week's show notes. Or even if they had to do an episode with some sort of let us help you with advice on your love life storyline, then it should have been Jen doing it on a radio show. Remember how she used to do that? Except nobody calls in, so her friends feel bad and they call in and shenanigans ensue. I don't know. It's just so dumb the way that it works out. This is the worst episode of Dawson's Creek ever, and I'm glad for Charles that it's over. I love that proposed storyline.
Oh my God, that idea is so good. It's so much better than what was this. Like, think how fun that episode would have been if, like, it was Jen's first time hosting. So granted, by this point, like, she's hosted before, but if it was like her first time hosting solo and her friends are worried, so they all get on the phone with these like voice modulators
and then they realize it's each other calling.
Yeah, that'd be so funny. That's a much better idea.
Now, in contrast, we did get a comment from Jay, who says, I may have been in a good mood when I recently rewatched Love Lines in preparation of this podcast episode. I mean, I'm definitely not going to defend anything or die on the hill for it, so let's get that out of the way. But like many others, I haven't watched this one in a long time. I get that it's not great. All the critiques Tracy, Charles, and the above commenters make are totally justified. However, I kind of liked seeing this again in a dumb, fun way. The Audrey, Dr. Drew stuff was cute. The awkwardness of the questions and having Joey, Jack, Jen on stage was a bit of fun. Not a lot, though. So I don't know. I would rather watch this one than Downtown Crossing easily, which kind of surprised me. Again, maybe I was just ready for this one or it caught me at a good time. I think I'd give it a 5.5, and it's still easily a top 5 cringe/dumb episode in series history, but I did enjoy it a bit more than I was expecting. Obviously, there could have been much better usage of time to advance stories differently or in better ways. I think that's fair. I was just thinking about this as I read this comment that, like, I guess if I had to choose between watching Downtown Crossing or Love Lines again, I'd watch Love Lines because it has more of the characters that I want to see in it. And you do have, like, I really like Audrey's return. Like, you have some light moments in it that if I had to choose an episode, I would probably choose Love Lines to watch again.
That makes sense. And I think some of our, or at least some of my personal dislikes about the episode is specifically in the context of when it was aired, right? Like, if you look at Love Lines just as a generic Dawson's Creek episode, it's not horrible. But if you look at it knowing that there's only 5 episodes left afterward, it becomes really, like, mind-boggling. For me, it depends on, like, the fact that it's the end of the last season and this is happening.
Yeah, I can see that being frustrating in context, for sure. I mean, that's definitely how I know you and I have felt about it when we talked about it last week. We got a comment from Sarah that says, my big issue with the Joey and Eddie storyline, Eddie knows that Joey was seeing someone else while he was gone and never once asks if maybe that's why she's not ready to fully commit to him. Joey is the star of the show, but the show avoids her POV like the plague. Things constantly happen to her and she reacts to them, but she rarely drives the story in later seasons, which is so frustrating. This episode is also such a terrible contrast between Eddie and Pacey. Pacey spent 4 episodes respecting Joey's space and letting her decide what she wanted, while Eddie can't go 45 seconds without complaining that Joey won't sleep with him. He was so out of character this episode that no way he would go on stage and spill information about Joey's father. I don't like Eddie, but he's better than that. And I think that that's actually a really insightful thing, that the show does treat Joey like the star, but they do avoid her point of view. Like, she's right. Joey's reacting to so many things happening. Joey's not really moving a lot of stories forward, it feels.
Yeah. It's kind of a catch-22. I almost feel like that episode and a few of these later episodes would be better if they had forced Joey to narrate them first-person point of view. Because at least then you'd get some of her mindset. And, like, they'd probably have to push her character a little bit more.
Yeah, you would get a sense that she's learning things and expressing things and desiring things, whereas right now we don't really get that out of the character that's Joey.
Yeah, she's at this point, she's a person that, like, these boys are happening to.
Exactly. Yeah. Sarah also adds, you know what? I'm going to give it to that Screen Rant list, the one that was comparing the OC and Dawson's Creek. Parents on the OC made a lot of questionable choices, but the OC did a much better job keeping the adults integral to the story instead of having them fade in and out of the series. Even Grams was basically non-existent in the last two seasons. That's fair.
Yeah. Like, that is very fair. And I like the entire character of Grams' storyline is perplexing to me right now because we're just running out of time and nothing has happened.
Yeah, we know that she has cancer. We know that Jen knows about it.
Yeah.
And we know that Grams broke up with Uncle Bill. Jen has told CJ about it, and that's pretty much all we hear.
Yeah, and there's only 5 episodes left, two of which take place sometime after now.
Now, do you think you're going to see Grams in the series finale, or do you think... Do you think she might not make it? You tell me.
Like the show finale?
Yeah, like the series finale. Do you think Grams will be in the series finale?
I think so. Okay. I think so.
Okay. Well, you'll find out in a few weeks.
Maybe she'll get married in the series finale.
So there will be a wedding. That is still your prediction.
I'm sticking with the wedding.
Okay. Before we move too far ahead of ourselves here... if you want to talk to us about this week's episode that we are chatting about, which is 620 Catch 22, go ahead and jump in the comment section, DawsonSpeak.com, of whatever the latest show post will be at the top that we've talked about. Or that's also where we'll include some links to things we've talked about, or if anything is mentioned, maybe some extra thoughts. You could read Charles's pitch for his episodes of Dawson's Creek he would write.
Someone petition to get me a writing credit, please. I'd appreciate it.
And a time machine while you're at it. And there's also links on our website on how to contact us. Email DawsonSpeakPod@gmail.com, social media at DawsonSpeakPod. There's also our voicemail. You can leave us a voice memo or you can email it to us if that's easier. 732-98-CREEK. That is 732-982-7335. Share with us your hashtag Dawson's Creek taught me's. Also, while you're on the website, click over to our merch store on TeePublic where you can check out our Dawson's Creek /Speak merch, which people, again, I think I've mentioned this before, but some people have asked if we would leave that store up when the podcast is done. And the answer to that right now is yes. But we'll talk about all of that when we get to like the real end of our show. We're not there yet. Okay, before we jump into 620 officially, Charles, tell us your news update about Paula Cole.
Well, Tracy, I'm taking a break from Paula Cole facts this week to give you a Paula Cole adjacent news update because I think that's what Paula would want. And also I need to preserve facts for the end of the podcast because we're almost there and I only have a few left.
Okay.
As I've mentioned, Paula Cole has an artist mother, Stephanie Cole. Stephanie Cole's artwork is now on display at the Fuller Craft Museum in Brockton, Massachusetts through October of this year. The work in Stephanie Cole, Secular Cathedral, is different from the work displayed last year in My Life in Pieces. Among the pieces on display now are one inspired by the death of a family cat, one inspired by a family trip to the UK, and a tribute to Paula Cole's dad, who, as you remember, taught her, well, didn't like teach her music, but kind of taught her music. In actual Paula Cole news, and this is a very short snippet that I can't build into a full fact, so you get another freebie this week. She's back in the studio recording new music.
Oh.
When I first learned about this, I felt like it was a really quick turnaround after her last album. But I think that's part because in my head, I'm like, oh, we're doing this podcast, and she's going to release like 3 albums in that time. As if the podcast is a fixed amount of time in my head, whereas we've actually been doing this for almost 3 years.
Wait, so she's released 3 albums in 3 years, basically. Or she will... She's released 2 and she's working on her 3rd.
Correct.
That's a lot, honestly.
She's very prolific. And she has, according to my Paula Cole fact from last week, go listen to that if you don't remember, she has probably a giant back catalog of unreleased material.
That is true. And that commercial she did, that song she did for that commercial, car commercial?
The Mercury?
Yeah.
Yeah, she came up with that song, Lickety Split.
Thank you. Charles, I'm curious. Are you saving like your big Paula Cole facts for the ending, or are you just kind of like just scrolling them away right now?
I'm just scrolling them away. Okay. Right now. I'm making do for winter.
Okay. Okay, thank you for sharing those updates.
Anytime. You want to know about Paula Cole's mom, I got you covered.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I was going to pull up some tweets from people because I had tweeted after we released Love Lines that we needed some positive encouragement for you as we were heading to the end of the series, because Love Lines was so, like, terrible for the both of us that I was like, we don't want Charles to lose hope. And people tweeted some very nice things, but I cannot pull it up right now because for some reason Twitter is not loading for me. So
because Tracy doesn't want me to want to tell me nice things about myself. I'm kidding.
I retweeted some. I've shared some with Charles. I'll continue to share those. But thank you, everyone, for being so nice to Charles. And not spoiling anything.
I really appreciate it. I do.
Yeah. All right. Let's get in to 620 Catch 22, which is a reference to the book, which they are reading in Henson's class, as Charles predicted. Congratulations. The IMDb fan submitted anonymously written summary says that Joey aces Professor Henson's final exam and ends the semester with a C+. Joey is finally relieved that her ordeal with Henson is over. However, she decides she wants him as her advisor after she chooses English as her major. Eddie proposes they go backpacking through Europe before going their separate ways to college. Reluctant at first to jump so suddenly on such an intense trip, Joey decides to go, only to find a goodbye note from Eddie, this time for good, saying that she deserves someone better than him. Elsewhere, David finally breaks up with Jack, who ponders if he was only with David to prove to himself that he could hold a steady relationship. Meanwhile, Pacey continues dating Sadia and selling stocks, but things change drastically, first when Sadia leaves him by returning to her fiancé, then the biotech stocks that he and Dawson were investing in go bankrupt. Pacey then asks Rich Rinaldi to borrow some money, but the cold-hearted Rinaldi refuses. Frustrated and angry, Pacey finally snaps and punches him in the face, and he instantly fires Pacey. Okay, there are some things in there that I feel like are a little bit of a misread.
A few, like, I would call them factual errors.
Yeah, so the first one being that Eddie doesn't tell Joey that she deserves someone better, essentially, right? He's kind of like, you're not an adventurous girl, bye, is basically what he says, and we'll talk about it. And then some stuff with Pacey, but let's just start chatting about the episode. I don't think we need to debate too much about what the A storyline is, because it is, say it with me, everyone, it's Joey.
Yeah.
Now, Joey, as we learned after last semester, like, she failed the final in Henson's class, right? Because she showed up late.
Yes. And she only answered, like, one question or something.
So apparently this is a year-long class that is not graded by semester. You basically get your final grade at the end of the semester. Is that how I'm understanding it?
It seems like it to me.
Is that weird?
Oh, listen, we haven't gone to undergrad in quite a long time. I don't remember taking any courses like that. That being said, most of my courses right now are like that. So I don't know what's normal.
Yeah. Interesting.
Maybe you're in academia.
Maybe that's how Worthington does it. I've for sure, at least the courses that I am involved with at USC, I don't think they do that. Not to my knowledge, but maybe that's a thing. People out there, if you've gone to universities where classes work like this, let us know. We have some listeners who are teachers who can also tell us.
You know, Worthington's like a weird, expensive liberal arts school. Maybe they just do things differently.
Yeah, maybe. So now, Joey, though, before she actually would get to that part where the final comes around, she's studying for her final in Henson's class, and she and Eddie they've been busy making summer plans, and we left them in the last episode. They kind of got back on the same page, and now they are making summer plans with each other.
We're going to be kicked out of our little love nest by week's end.
At which point, we're going to move into my car, which I've got parked down by the river.
That is not the plan.
That's my plan.
Oh, yeah? I thought we were going to get jobs in the Cape this summer, live at my sister's and save money.
Right, and endure weekly interrogations from your father about the lack of prospects for my future.
You're starting school in the fall at one of the most prestigious writing programs in the country.
Yes, I know, in California. And if we're going to be ripped apart by geography in 3 short months, I'm not going to spend that time bussing tables. I've got some bigger plans in mind.
And what do these bigger plans entail?
Oh, no. No, right now you need to focus on one thing and one thing only. And after the exam, Joe, all will be revealed.
Well, and what if I can't wait that long?
I think you can.
I want to go on the record now.
Okay.
I have in my notes the second major note I took. Prediction. Eddie and Joey go to Paris at the end of Real Season 6. I am annoyed that this all happens in one episode, so I don't even get to reap the benefits of my prediction.
Yes, so when Charles watches Dawson's Creek, he takes notes like as things are happening, and then gets very excited when he can like make predictions, and 0-for-1 there.
I felt so excited, and then the show just took everything away from me. But Eddie's got a surprise.
Yes. Well, then, so let's skip over the fact that Joey takes the final while she's about to take the final, like before it actually starts. Eddie is there with her when Hudson comes in to proctor to the exam. They have this like awkward and slightly unpleasant exchange where Eddie tries to thank Hudson. Hudson's like really indifferent. They're kind of like snippy at each other. Joey tells them to cool it so she can take this damn final and get it over with. After the exam is when Eddie surprises Joey with a backpack and a guidebook to Europe so that the two can plan this whole summer backpacking around Europe. You know, it's like that romantic thing, right? Like going away with someone you love to not slum it. I don't want to use that phrase, but like backpacking around Europe and like it's like a college. I feel like it's like a liberal arts college student's dream, right?
Yeah. I mean, generalizing? That's total like on the road, like beatnik, hipster, Eddie type of thing.
It's so funny because there's such a parallel in this to Gilmore Girls. But this isn't the Gilmore Girls podcast, but there's a very similar-ish type thing. But yes, so they're like so caught up in the excitement of planning and like all these places they want to go to and see, like visiting dead writers' graves, things like that. But then Joey starts to kind of think in practical terms. That's the Joey we have known for quite some time. You know, it's one thing to get caught up, but Joey kind of gets back down to earth much quicker than Eddie.
You want to do everything?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, everything within reason.
Within reason?
Well, yeah, I mean, we should be somewhat practical about this.
You want to be practical about running away together?
Well, Eddie, I mean, running away together isn't as easy as it looks on TV. I mean, believe me, I've done it before. And we're going to get back in the fall. We're going to be starting school. We're going to be completely broke.
So?
So that thought doesn't terrify you?
No, not more than the thought of not spending the summer with you. Or not seeing your face for the first time you see the Eiffel Tower or London Bridge or the Plaza San Marco in Venice. You know, it's not like either of us have any money now. I mean, we're broke. So what? We start over. Rebuild things from scratch.
With you in California and me here.
Yeah, and a whole lifetime's worth of memories. Things that'll never leave us, no matter how broke we get.
Eddie, all I'm saying is that running away together, no matter how romantic and magical it all seems at the time, it doesn't solve anything, okay? So whatever it is that you're running away from, whether it be circumstances or geography, you know, fate, another person, it's always going to be there when you get back.
Okay, so what would you suggest to solve these problems, Joey? I mean, what do you want to do, just ignore the opportunities that come our way?
No, I'm trying to be practical.
Which means what, exactly?
Maybe we should just wait, you know, scale back a little.
Scale back?
Yeah, maybe work for a month or two and then go.
Joey, we're going to spend the rest of our lives working.
Yeah, and we have the entire summer to take this trip. Nobody said we have to go tomorrow.
I do.
What?
You don't even really want to do this, do you?
Of course I want to do this.
Yeah, but only on your terms.
Well, whose terms am I supposed to be doing this on, Eddie? I mean, if I'm going to throw my life entirely off course for the chance...
Oh, my God, what are you talking about throwing it off course? I'm not asking you to throw your life off course, Joey. I'm talking about a summer here. All I'm asking is that you take a leap. Come away with me.
Oh. Like Saul Bellow or On the Road. Eddie, those are just stories, poems, little pieces of unreality that we're not meant to base our lives on. Eventually, we always have to come back and deal with the real world.
So what? What are you going to do? You just want to sit here for your entire life waiting and hoping for the world to come to you? Because the point of those stories, Joey, is that people's lives, their real lives, only begin when they step out into the world. And when you do that, when you meet it head on, maybe you change the world, maybe you don't, but the point is that it changes you. And that is what people mean when they talk about growing up.
So what? If I want to be with you, I'm supposed to just throw all of my previous life experience out the window. I'm just supposed to stop being who I am.
Who you are, Joey, is not some scared little girl who's afraid to take chances on anything, who's afraid to really love someone because of the risk or the pain. That does not define you as a person. Or maybe it does, you know? I mean, maybe I'm crazy. Maybe you've just blinded me.
Are you done? You should probably find somewhere else to sleep tonight.
It totally feels like they're just ships passing the night. Like, we thought they were back on the same page, and how quickly that fell apart.
Yeah, even in that scene, they accelerated from, like, planning their little trip in a very endearing manner to just full-on fighting about philosophical things in a span of, like, 2 minutes.
Yeah, yeah, and I, for some reason, like, of course I couldn't forget that she went away with Pacey almost impulsively that summer after season 3, but that definitely clouds or affects how Joey treats impulsive decisions nowadays, I think. I mean, not nowadays, but, you know, in her college years. That wasn't that long ago that she jumped on the true love. And then when they came back, you know, when she says, like, you got to come back and deal with reality. Like, that's so straight out of these lessons she learned in her senior year in high school.
Yeah, I mean, in that circumstance, the bloom went off the rose. Is that how that phrase works?
What?
The bloom went off the rose? The blush went off the rose?
I think it's the blush.
The rose got bad real quick is what I'm trying to say. So it's understandable that that experience would inform this experience.
Yeah, definitely. And, like, I see where Eddie is coming from, but I think that this also echoes back to, like, remember when he came back and was like, Joey, I need you in order to write. Like, I need you in order to be creative. It was all about, like, how she could fit into his life, right? Mm-hmm. And that's a little bit of how I think he's coming off in this episode, too, where he's like, you know, this is what I want to do. This is my decision. We have to do this because it's like now or never kind of a thing. And I think perhaps in these last few episodes, we're going to start seeing Joey finally realize that she really needs to be her own person on her own independently. It does not matter what Dawson or Pacey or Audrey even, like, it doesn't matter what any of them think that Joey's life should be like. And this is very true for a 19-year-old girl, right? Like, you're constantly trying to figure out who other people want you to be, and maybe right now is the time for Joey to think about who it is that she wants to be.
That makes a lot of sense. That's like a discussion that happens a lot in college too, right? And I mean, even in this episode, she finally settles down on, like, a course of study, so I assume this is going through her mind.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is her second year in college now, so it's like, not that suddenly makes you older and wiser, but it's like the difference between Joey and her first year versus second year, you know, we've seen not a ton of growth, but if this is the growth we're finally going to see, like, at the end of her second year from maybe high school Joey, then I'll take it.
Yeah, I mean, it's better than nothing.
Yeah.
It's something.
So, I mean, they have this fight, they kind of part a little bit, and then Joey the next day or sometime, I don't know how time passes in this show, she gets her exam back from Hudson. It's an A-, which means that she has passed the class with a C+, as the IMDb summary told us. And Hudson says he would have given her an A, but he thought that her essay was a bit too bleak.
You know, the sad thing is that I almost gave you an A, and I went back and forth about it, and then ultimately I found your essay on Catch-22 a little bleak.
You found it bleak?
It's a story of hope, Joey. I mean, this man confronted with the absolute absurdity of the human condition. I mean, he's terrified to his core. He takes a leap of faith. He chooses life. Here, page 461. Read the part that's marked.
You'll have to try like hell to catch me this time. They will try like hell. And even if they don't find you, what kind of way is that to live? You'll always be alone. No one will ever be on your side. And you'll always live in danger of betrayal. I live that way now, but you can't just turn your back on all of your responsibilities and run away from them, Major Danby insisted. It's such a negative move. It's escapist. Yossarian laughed with buoyant scorn and shook his head. I'm not running away from my responsibilities. I'm running to them. There's nothing negative about running away to save my life.
As I said in class, a lot of critics find that moment too sentimental. An author ham-fistedly reaching in and injecting an amoral tale with a moral. An embarrassing betrayal of all the dark comedy that came before it. But me? I've always kind of liked it. It has such a nice, hopeful ring to it.
It's interesting, because I guess Joey could have read this two ways, right? Eddie isn't, like, running away from things. He's running to something, right? And mm-hmm. in some ways, perhaps that's what Joey should be doing. Like, not running away with other people, but running toward her own, like, individual destiny or choices or whatever.
So you think that, like, one of the things Joey should be doing is, or currently she's just in this mess now with a whole bunch of, like as we said earlier, people happening to her, whereas, like, she should be running toward to, like, actualizing as a person.
Yes, yes.
Okay, that makes sense. That makes sense. Oh, that's such a nice, like, dual-sided coin thing. It makes sense from, like, Eddie's perspective, too, right? His entire life he's been, like, this blue-collar guy from Worcester, and now you inject a little bit of, like, success into him, and he's getting ready to just roar all over Europe, basically.
Yeah. So, I mean, I can't fault Eddie for making the choices he does in order to, like, move his life forward. I am still annoyed that he came back and broke up the Poe, but that's just me.
Yeah. I will make a practical note. It's perfectly fine to work for a little bit and then go on your trip. I don't think most people would enjoy a full-on three-month slumming it backpacking trip across Europe. I feel like that's a bit much. I'm old.
I mean, yeah, I wouldn't say that it's not enjoyable. I know plenty of people who have done similar trips, and
I just feel like a month is enough.
I think this is a personal preference. And I think this would suit Eddie. I do think a trip like this would suit Eddie. It'd give him a lot to write about. So as we say farewell to Hedson, because this is a series wrap on him finally, I do have to tell you that we are still not series wrapping on Harley and her little boyfriend.
Okay. There's only four episodes after this?
I mean, at this point, there's only episode 21 and 22, and then we've got the series finale.
That are in this timeline.
Yeah, so we've got two episodes left of this timeline.
Why do we need to see them again? I don't understand.
Yeah, well, you'll see. But goodbye, Hedson. How do you feel about saying goodbye to Hedson?
Well, he's not the teacher I'm going to miss most of the teachers that we say goodbye to on the show. But, you know, I didn't hate him. I thought he was kind of an ass.
Especially in the beginning.
Yeah, especially in the beginning. Still toward the end. But he kind of redeemed himself slightly, just barely.
Yeah, I think of the professors that we have met in the college years, I wouldn't rank him the worst.
Yeah, he didn't try to, like, make out with one of his students.
As afraid as you were that was going to happen.
Yeah,
And he was definitely frustrating, and I did not like him for many of those moments. But now that he's gone, I'm kind of like, I guess I'll miss him. But, yeah, but not seriously.
I mean, like, him not trying to make out with one of his students, I think puts him in the top quartile of the teachers we get in this show.
Oh, boy. Oh, well, goodbye, Hedson. And after that little insight into what Eddie's motivations may be, Joey has this, like, change of heart. I think she kind of gets the wrong message out of it, but she decides that she's like, no, she wants to throw herself into this Europe trip, right? Like, she goes back to the dorm. She's super excited. While she's there, Audrey is, like, agonizing over choosing summer classes because she has to take summer courses in order to stay enrolled and on track at Worthington. But Joey is getting ready to, like, go back to Eddie and be like, no, I'm in. Let's do this. 3-month trip. Let's go. But then she finds a letter from Eddie.
Dear Joey, as you know, I'm not good at goodbyes. But I guess that's what this is. A real one this time. Because as much as I thought I wanted us to be together, I guess what I want more is to be one of those people who lives every moment of his life without indecision, without regrets. Someone who dares to disturb the universe without a thought to the consequences. And you're not one of those people. At least not yet. Maybe you'll prove me wrong about that one day.
I hope you do. But who knows? Maybe people can't change. Maybe we're doomed to repeat the same mistakes over and over again, no matter how hard we try. I always hope for a happy ending. How crazy is that? Take care of yourself.
So, as the IMDb summary inaccurately told us, Eddie is not so much saying, like, you deserve better than me, Joey. It's more like, we are going in two different directions, by which I'm not sad to see him go. Although what I told you, Charles, after you watched this episode, this was a serious rap on Eddie. You seemed very upset.
Before I get to that, I want to comment on this little screed that Eddie wrote,
okay,
about people maybe not being able to change and people being afraid to like throw themselves out of the universe without a moment's notice. Just think about Eddie 6 months ago.
That's true.
Like, without Joey, like, literally shoving him to, not literally, but like figuratively shoving him along, more or less forcing him to at least try to apply himself, he'd probably still be in Worcester working on his car.
That is definitely unfair for him to say. But also, I mean, this is Eddie's MO, right?
Yeah.
Kind of acting immediately on his emotions and then leaving, walking away. And this, for good now, he has walked away from Joey. And now tell us, Charles, why you are upset.
Literary fuckboys who do very little analysis. Okay. Everything being said about Eddie, I can't believe this is his last episode. Like, Eddie was such a big part of this season. The fact that he returns for, what, two episodes and then series wraps? He series wraps, right?
Yep.
The fact that he returns for two episodes, blows up the Poe, and then nothing really goes anywhere, and then he series wraps is just bewildering to me. Like, I thought they were building this up to be, like, the end conflict of the season, which I would have, like, not been crazy about, but I would have accepted, not to just kill it two episodes before the end.
Yeah, and you're right, given that he's come back, we've seen him for three episodes, and one of those episodes was Love Lines. It's like, why did they do this?
Yeah, why did you even bring him back?
Just to blow up the Poe. They just didn't want the Poe to be together.
The kind of funny thing is, so I've told you all about my writing professor who is a Dawson's Creek fan, right? And I think I've mentioned this on pod, but a few months ago, she was talking about the show with someone else, and like I had to stick my fingers in my ear. But before I successfully stuck my fingers in my ear, I heard her say, like, oh, well, for season six, you have to watch so you know whether Joey will pick Pacey or... And then I didn't hear anything because that was when my fingers hit my ears. And I assumed that it was going to be Eddie. So I assumed that this was going to be, like, the great conflict. And the fact that it's not is just bewildering to me.
Well, I wouldn't say it's, like, a grand conflict, but it's pretty significant that she had to choose between Pacey and Eddie, and she chose Eddie, right? Like, that was a pretty big thing, because 6:15 was that big turning point. And all of a sudden, everyone was like, oh my god, the Poe, we're back on track, this is the show. And then suddenly, it was like this choice she had to make, and she chose Eddie instead. Like, that's something that's pretty significant.
Yeah, but just like a lot of other things in this show, I expected more agonizing over the decision. Like, once the choice presented itself, I feel like she made it fairly quickly. Right? I expected at least one more episode.
That's true. We didn't really get much, like, pondering or anything. Whereas it felt like when it came to Dawson Pacey, there was, like, a lot of pondering.
Yeah. And now that Eddie's out of the picture, maybe the pondering's not over. I don't know.
Well, yeah, I guess you'll have to find out in our final two episodes. Maybe another love triangle will present itself.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Maybe they'll, like, randomly next episode, they'll start it off, it'll just be the Dawson, Pacey, Joey love triangle again. Speaking of Pacey, let's jump over to what Pacey's up to. This episode opens with Pacey on a date with Sadia, who we later learned has a boyfriend. But Pacey is basically, like, he's on top of the world. He's been on top of the world for a couple of episodes now. And he's taken on this, like, role of Rich Rinaldi, basically, for the new recruits at work.
Good morning, gentlemen. I had sex with a beautiful woman last night. Now, this should not have happened. She was way out of my league, and I even like to think that I'm a fairly handsome guy, but I'm not that handsome. And I like to think that I'm pretty good in bed, but I'm not that good. So how does something like that happen? I'll tell you. I'm 20 years old, and I am doing exactly what I was put on this earth to do. I am making money, hand over fist, faster than I know how to spend it. And let's tell the truth. You all came here today because you're trying to escape the miserable, bottom-feeding existence that you've been living that has denied you what is rightfully yours. If you want this for yourselves, you can have it. But I'm here to tell you, you will get your asses kicked on a daily basis. But you will learn, and ultimately, you will do what you were put on this earth to do, which is make money. Now, if any of you are still interested in this proposition, be here, 9 a.m., sharp, Monday morning. If you are late, do not come into my building. Turn around, go home, and prepare yourselves for life in retail. I'll see you then.
It's interesting because it's like, I feel like we see this in Pacey, at least in the last two seasons. Like, every job he goes into, it's like that same kind of like, goes in, isn't really sure what he's doing, but is like naturally talented and builds up his confidence and then like becomes his mentor. And then things crash and burn, which we will see this episode. But it's like that's happened with Pacey quite a few times.
Yeah, poor Pacey. Like, he just needs some stability. But he does have a kind of a natural... the character has a natural charisma that, like, I think pushes him toward leadership.
Right. Now, I do want to bring up that Pacey mentions he's 20 years old, right?
Uh-huh.
In the restaurant date we see at the beginning of this episode, like,
yes,
he's drinking, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
How is he able to drink?
I don't know.
We'll say this later about Jack when we get to that part, because he's also drinking at this bar, which maybe that's like kind of a different situation, but he's still underage. I don't know. I feel like this show got to the point where they like just wanted the characters to age up so badly, so they started putting them in these storylines that were like not realistic for their age, but just like hoping that the audience will run with it. That's how Riverdale's doing it, at least this season, because you've got two 17-year-olds making and selling rum. But anyways.
I was going to say, if Pacey still had his goatee, maybe he could trick people to think that he was older, except that goatee made him look younger, so incorrect. You know, he has money. Maybe he bribed somebody. Maybe he has a very good fake ID, which are very difficult to find in Massachusetts.
Maybe all of that is true. But Pacey's at work, Dawson calls him, and he basically says, like, you know, I'm ready to cash out the investment I made, right? Like, he feels like he's got a good feeling about it. He's just ready to take that money and just get started, right? But Pacey convinces him otherwise.
Dawson, what's up, man?
Hey, Pacey, not much. Listen, I've been thinking.
Let me guess, you're nervous, right?
Nervous? Who, me? Thousands of dollars of play in a stock market, which, from what I understand, can only be described as globally weak? Nah, who's nervous?
Okay, well, how about this? You just trust me, and I promise that everything will be all right. Have I ever let you down in the past? Actually, you know what? Don't answer that.
But seriously, though, I'm not nervous. I'm thinking it might be time to cash out. I've got a lot of film to buy, and from what I can understand, that's going to be my biggest expense, so...
Okay, Dawson, here's the deal. I know that you need to make money and that you need to make it fast. So what I've done for you is invested you in this biotech company called Stepatec. They have a miracle flu vaccine that is up for approval by the FDA right now. And the word on the street is it's a shoo-in. So if you can hold on for just a few more days, I promise you it will be worth your while. It'll be like the difference between making El Mariachi and Clerks.
Okay, well, at least that's jargon that I understand. I guess in the spirit of Clerks, I could charge the film. I've been applying for credit cards like crazy, and two of them came in the mail today.
I think that's what's commonly known as a sign, my friend.
Maybe so. Maybe so.
Okay, so we're cool here, right?
What? I don't know. It's all some kind of a David Mamet movie to me. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about, but I trust you. Keep me posted.
Will do. Talk to you later, man.
So that's the only scene we see Dawson in this episode, right?
Yeah, for someone who loses his life savings, he's not on screen very much.
Well, at this point, we don't know he's about to lose his life savings. We'll get to that later. What a nice little bit of foreshadowing they've set up. Because as soon as he saw this scene, what was your first thought?
Well, I was so nervous the entire time. Like, this entire episode regarding Pacey, I was very nervous because, like, I was still laboring under the idea that he was going to get hit with an SEC investigation. So seeing him and Dawson talking about this and like being so upbeat and happy only spoke to me as in things are going to go to shit.
Which things did go to shit. Now, you know, this is almost like classic kind of a story arc here, right? This character is on the up and up. Things are going great on top of the world. But because we know this character of Pacey, and not that like he doesn't deserve good things, but it's like they tend to do this with his character quite a bit. Things might be seemingly going great, and then it crashes almost like suddenly and in a very explosive way. Basically, the FDA approval that they thought was like a quote-unquote shoe-in, the way that Rich had said it was, basically just doesn't go through. And then pretty much everyone who invested in it has lost all their money, which includes Pacey, because I guess he invested his own money in it, and also Dawson. After that happens, Pacey meets up with Sadia, who tries to get a quote from him about it. Now, clearly she wasn't just sleeping with him to like use him as a source, but that's essentially what it becomes. And now we have fulfilled the trope of a journalist who sleeps with their sources.
Sadia's character is just slightly marginally better than most of these tropes. But I was messaging Tracy while I was watching this episode, and like the pre-credit scene is them in bed together, right? If I remember correctly.
It's about the restaurant.
Okay, it was them going on a date. And I stopped watching in the middle of the pre-credits scene to tell Tracy I was already upset at this episode. Because as I understand it, this is series wrap on Sadia too,
yes,
right?
Yes, it is.
And in her last episode, one of her last actions as a character, she managed to like fulfill this very frustrating trope.
Right, yes. And then also Pacey finds out that she is now engaged, so things are just going not Pacey's way. I don't know. Not that he like wanted to be in a relationship with Sadia, but like now she's engaged and it's just, it's got to be frustrating to be Pacey is all I can say.
Why even make her engaged? Like, why even make her have a boyfriend? It's not consequential. I don't understand. I guess it's just to show that Pacey has lost his anchor a little bit, but man, does he come crashing down at the end.
Exactly. Now, Pacey does go to Rich to ask for a loan because he wants to pay Dawson back. While he's trying to figure out what he's going to do, because like we said, Pacey also invested his own money, apparently like all of it, because he has zero savings. He has spent money like crazy. Now he's feeling terrible because Dawson has lost all of his money. And I don't want to say it's all because of Pacey, but it's like mostly because of Pacey.
You're not going to hold me up. I got a hot date of my own tonight. I admit it. You shamed me with her. Now I got to spend my nights keeping up with my protege.
Okay, that's good. I want to ask you one thing before you go.
As long as it doesn't involve me holding you while you cry.
I promise.
What is it, kid?
Well, I was just wondering if maybe you could cover me. Loan me a little money.
You're kidding, right?
No. I wish I was, but you have no idea how hard it is for me to ask you for this, Rich, but a friend of mine a couple weeks ago, he came to me and he wanted to double his money really fast, so I just put it all into Stepatec.
That was a stupid move, Pacey.
But he wanted to pull out. And I told him not to. I told him to just trust me and ride the thing out. And this guy is my oldest and closest childhood friend. I cannot screw him like this, Rich.
Well, it's already done, Pacey.
No, I'm serious. All I want to do is give him back his initial investment. And then I'll pay you back with whatever interest you want.
What about you? What happened to your disposable income?
I got nothing left. Everything I had was in Stepatec. I'm worth like, I don't know, $300 right now.
And you know, it's funny. You're so good at your job. You're so confident. I sometimes forget how young and stupid you are.
Please, Rich, I need your help, not the speech right now, okay?
Oh, I think you do, actually. And I'm going to say to you what you should have told your little friend in the first place. No.
That's it? That's all you have to say to me? I come to you, I embarrass myself, and you're just going to say no?
Pretty much, yeah.
You know, Rich, sometimes you're so good at your job, I forget what I'm feeling.
Watch your tone.
Okay, Rich, I'm just asking you for this one favor, just one time.
I don't do favors with her.
Why not? Because God forbid you have to drop the Gordon Gekko routine for a second? I mean, this would be so easy for you, man. Just help me out here.
Help you out? I give you a job with her. I give you a chance to escape some bottom feeder existence. And every step of the way, you have been a holier-than-thou pain in the ass. So you tell me. Why should I help you out? take this pin. Take this pin with her and write down today's date, because from this day forward, you're going to amount to nothing. You are a failure and a loser, and you deserve everything that comes.
And that is a series wrap on Rich Rinaldi as well.
Oh, Dawson's Creek taught me to diversify my holdings.
Yes, exactly. Don't put all of your money in a stock that is still, like, everyone says is a sure thing, even though, like, it's not actually been approved by the government. Don't do it.
Biopharm is volatile. Probably shouldn't put everything on it. Also, Dawson's Creek taught me don't punch my boss.
Yes, that too. Pacey gets fired here, right? Like, there's no coming back from that. And even if, I feel like even if he hadn't gotten to that physical fight with Rich, I can't see Pacey working there any longer either. Now, it's interesting, because as Rich was saying all of that, like, it reminded me so much of Sheriff Witter, you know? Like, the things that we've heard him say, and I think that's why Pacey snapped the way he did. It wasn't, I mean, emotions were already running high, but, like, the way that he was talking down to Pacey, like, that's something his family has said to him his whole life.
Yeah, that's real classic, like, Sheriff Witter stuff. Yeah. Like, early Sheriff Witter.
Ugh. Now, the episode does end with a shot on Dawson's house, and Pacey, who has come back to Capeside, is walking toward it. Again, episode ends that way. Where do you think we're going to pick up in the next episode?
I'm going to guess immediately afterward.
I will let you know right now that is a very good guess.
I understand this show. I get it. How much money do you think Dawson lost?
I don't know. We don't really know how much he gave Pacey, do we?
He said it was all the money he saved up working as Todd's assistant in LA, right? Mm. Which, honestly, that can't be that much money, because he's been doing that, what, a summer? Half a year?
I want to say somewhere around the half a year mark, because, like, we assume they reconnected in the summer when we last saw Dawson in season 5, and then they at least work through Halloween for sure, and then, like, Thanksgiving, Christmas, because Natasha comes back then.
Yes.
And then he obviously got paid for the reshoot, so that was probably a little bit more money than just being Todd's assistant. So, yeah. I mean, he's not, like, a millionaire, but I'm sure he's got, like, a sizable chunk for a 19, 20-year-old.
Yeah. Generally, my understanding is director's assistants probably don't make a ton of money. Like, the reshoots probably paid him pretty better.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Well, whatever it is, it's gone.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye indeed. Speaking of byes, shall we move on to our last storyline?
Okay.
Jack. Now, last time we saw Jack, he and David had a very uncomfortable argument and parting of ways at the end of the Love Lines episode. Now, Jack goes to the stand to try to talk to David, who isn't totally thrilled about seeing him, but he does agree to meet Jack at Hell's Kitchen that night to talk things over. And when he gets to the bar, he sees Jack talking to a guy who Jack later says is, like, from his sociology class, and David is, like, visibly irritated about it.
Hey. Thanks for coming. Have you been waiting long?
No. Actually, I ran into a guy from my sociology class.
Yeah, I saw.
Look, that's not what you think, right? That's completely innocent.
By which you're implying that the thing the other night was.
You're not even gonna give me a chance here, are you? I mean, it's like you structured this whole scene before you even walked into the place.
I had two versions, actually.
Let me guess, the version you're gonna use is the one where I'm the bad guy?
Yeah. You led me on, you know. That Halloween party when we first met. You led me to believe you were one of the undead.
Come on, if you're not gonna take this seriously.
I'm being serious. I have a serious Tom Cruise vampire Lestat fantasy that I need to fulfill while I'm still young. Which is why I'm breaking up with you.
What?
Yeah, you know it has to be done. I was kidding myself.
Whoa, hold on a second. If you think I'm gonna let you walk out of here like this, I mean, come on, David. This isn't how I wanted this to turn out.
Well, guess what? It is, so sucks for you, huh? Or maybe it doesn't. Maybe you're gonna get off easy after all. It's only my heart that's gonna get even the slightest bit broken.
Why do you say things like that? I wouldn't be here tonight if I didn't want to make this work.
Yeah, and you wouldn't be here at all unless you were trying to prove something to yourself.
Prove what?
Look, Jack. I want what everybody wants. I want to be important to somebody. Maybe you want that too, but If you do, to be honest, I can't really see it. Because all I see when I look at you is somebody who's going through the motions of being in a relationship because he thinks it's the right thing to do. I don't know. I just know that that isn't enough for me. So, goodbye.
Wait. You're just gonna walk away?
Have a good summer, Jack. And keep in touch.
The whole time, I'm imagining, like, the actor who plays David just saying this to the writers.
Oh, you seem like the kind of person who wants to write a character but doesn't actually want to write a character. You just want to prove it to yourself.
Oh. Basically, right? That's how it feels. It feels like this breakup is the writers being like, bye? Like, this is so disappointing to me, what happens with... I mean, I was already disappointed in the last episode, and I'm even more disappointed that this is how it ends. Like, without a real resolution or real storyline, or... This doesn't even feel like a real conclusion.
It doesn't even, like, make sense. Like, one, last episode, I was so Team David. This episode, I'm so Team Jack. But, like... When they start to ramp up into their breakup, David makes that joke about, like, Vampire Lestat. And I was like, oh, he's joking. They're going to get back together. And then immediately they break up afterward.
And this is a series wrap on David.
What a waste of a character. Like, this entire season, they could have done so much more with him.
They really could. And I almost wonder, like, did they not because... they felt like they were already pushing the network's buttons. Like, what was the reason for not developing this character or this relationship? Like, I don't understand why they would even have, like, why they would even start all of this if they were just going to break it up or brush it under the rug and then break it up. Like, we don't get, this is even a thing like, oh, they introduce random person named Emma and then like they changed their mind and then now she's gone. Like, it just feels with David that they kept half-assing it. Like, they were throwing him in here and there in episodes and making it seem like they were developing a relationship, but so much of what we can infer about what actually happened between David and Jack off screen, like, that's all stuff that we just have to guess on our own, really.
Tracy, you're so right. Like, Jack and David's apparent relationship is so much like David just talking to the writers about how, like, oh, you have me here, but you're not really doing anything with me. Do you actually want me? That's so funny.
Now, after they officially break up, Jack and Jen are discussing whether or not David was right about, like, his analysis of Jack and their relationship. And the only reason why I'm including this is because I know you are upset about a part of this.
Either you just failed an exam... or last night didn't go as well as I expected it to.
You know, I've never really cared that much about school.
I'm sorry.
It's not your fault. Do you think that I was just going out with David to prove something to myself?
Something about what?
Just to prove that I could do it, that I could be in a relationship. You know, I have a boyfriend.
I don't know, I mean, is that something that you feel like you needed to prove to yourself?
Yeah. Who wants to be that 35-year-old guy that's living alone and still going out to the bar scene trying to find the right person?
Give me a break. You're 20 years old. You're not even legally old enough to be in those bars, let alone haunt them with your sad single self.
Yeah, that from the girl who was on a first-name basis with half the bouncers in New York.
Look, my point is that I don't think that everybody meets the love of their life when they're a teenager or when they're 25 or even when they're 35, but... that doesn't mean that you stop looking and hoping, you know, because you will meet that person. And when you do, I guess you know it.
You're going to end up with CJ. You know, David used to say that he knew you guys were going to stick because you gave him hope.
Me?
Yeah. I mean, you gave me hope. You did it, didn't you? You found somebody that makes you happy. Somebody who's not gay.
Well, he's slightly gay. If only in the seventh grade sense of the term. It does make me happy. Even when things are awful. You know, I'd share them with you if I could.
Thanks, but that's not necessary.
The thing that you were upset about is Jack's comments about CJ.
CJ's the worst.
And yet we're not series wrapped on him.
Oh my God. Like, of any of the relationships that should be a model in Dawson's Creek, CJ Jen is one of the worst ones.
Yeah. Well, apparently they're soulmates.
Oh God. I'm gonna vomit. Look, literally most of the time we see them on screen, they're like upset with each other.
Yeah. Now, one thing that I had to totally process until I was like, oh, I totally forgot about this. At this point, Jack doesn't know that Grams is sick.
No, he doesn't. Does he ever find out? I'm not sure.
Well, you got 2 episodes left to find out. Or maybe 4. Who knows?
Ooh.
And that is the end of that storyline. Charles, how are we feeling?
Okay. What's are of a catch-22s in this episode?
Okay. So I would say...
So Joey has to pick between going and not going to Paris?
Yes.
That's kind of a catch-22, I guess.
Yes. Which she's had to make this decision, like, multiple times in her life. And all of them have ended with her not going to Paris.
You figure, by random chance, on one of these multiple choices she has to make, she'll just say yes by accident, but not yet.
Did you predict at all that she would go to Paris? Is that one of your predictions floating around out there?
It might be. I feel like if it's not, I'll predict it right now. I assume she's going to go to Paris at some point on the show.
Okay.
I don't know if it'll be on screen, but...
I mean, this show has a hard enough time keeping track of all of its characters in the same city that, like, we may not see Joey in Paris, but maybe we will.
Okay, so that's Joey's catch-22.
Pacey.
Does Pacey have a catch-22?
I mean, at this point, we end the episode knowing that he has to tell Dawson. He either lies and doesn't tell Dawson about the money and tries to find a way to get him the money, or he tells him and the world blows up.
So, do we think Dawson doesn't know yet?
Well, of course he doesn't know. It's not like he's keeping an eye on the financial market. He didn't. I would argue that he doesn't even remember the name of Stepatech, you know? Like, he trusts Pacey.
People's ways of managing their portfolios back then just bewilder me.
Well, we have a lot of problems with how money is spent and saved or whatever on the show.
Yeah, that's true.
Now, I have to ask, because we have series wrapped on so many characters, what do you think, like, where do you think the show goes in the last 2 episodes? Do you think that, like, oh, they're trying to just move everything back to Cape Side now? Do you think that they are trying to leave room to, like, wrap up character storylines? Do you think they're going to introduce more characters? Like, what do you think is going to happen?
I hope they don't introduce more characters. Oh, my God. If they introduce more characters now, I have some bad news for the people playing those characters. You're not going to have a job for very long. I mean, I've lost what I thought the grand conflict of the season was going to be, that being Eddie and Pacey. So I assume there's still going to be a grand conflict at the end of the show.
I mean, at this point, it's like money-based, right?
Yeah. The options now are like conflict between Pacey and Dawson, in part about money, or like people joining together to help with Grams. I guess that's what's left. I don't know why, but I can't imagine the fallout of Pacey losing all of Dawson's money lasting for more than an episode. I feel like it gets wrapped up. The problem gets solved before the time skip.
Okay, so you think that the next episode will like start with what Pacey telling Dawson, and by the end of the episode, they're back to being like buddies.
I don't know if I put it that way, but I feel like by the end of next episode, they'll have come to some sort of understanding.
Okay. All right. Well, before we talk about the next episode, are we done talking about this episode?
That's everything I have.
All right. What is your favorite scene, moment, or part of this episode?
My 2 things. I have a favorite line. And, well, not a favorite line, but it's kind of like a least favorite line, but I thought it was kind of funny in context. The first time Jack sees David in the stand, right, when he's trying to apologize, I think one of his first lines is, this mad thing hasn't worn off yet, which I think is the worst thing you could say when someone is mad at you, right?
Yeah, probably.
Like, can you imagine if you were mad at me and I just said, oh, you're still mad at me? You're not done yet?
Yeah, I would be annoyed.
Like, come on, Jack. Apparently, like, obviously things didn't go well for him this episode, but my favorite scene is it's Eddie and Joey planning their trip together literally several minutes before they get into a big fight, because the trip they plan together is like, it's a little twee, it's a little like early 20-something English major traveling in Europe, because that's what they literally are. But you know, they seem genuinely excited about it. Joey's making all these like cute small plans about like visiting writers' graves in different countries. Like, they're genuinely excited, and it's kind of sweet. And you know, that's like, and I think that's a very relatable feeling too. I've loved the idea of like friend trips. I don't go on them as much as I would like, but just like planning things to do together is so, it's like a beautiful love language.
Now, you were taken aback when I told you that this was Eddie's last episode. So when you finished watching this episode, what did you, like, you were, I don't want to say you were happy, but, like, this being your favorite scene, like, is this still your favorite scene knowing that Eddie doesn't come back?
I mean, that does kind of put a damper on it, yeah, but I don't know how many other scenes can elevate to that level of a favorite scene. Like, taking it out of the context of this episode, that was my favorite moment.
Okay.
But, like, at the end of the day, and we can discuss this some more when we get to winners, at the end of the day, this episode is, like, a shitty experience for all the characters, right?
Mm, yeah, pretty much all around.
So, you know, that's a little speck of joy before everything went to shit.
True. That is very true. I would say that my favorite scene is that scene of Jack and Jen talking at the end, not the whole like reference to CJ, but it was just nice to see like their friendship kind of shining through, because so much of this season we haven't really gotten a lot of that. At least it feels like we definitely haven't. Like, they've been in scenes together, they've interacted, but like that kind of like closeness, I just feel like we haven't seen that of Jack and Jen in a while, and I really love their friendship. Like, I think that's one of my favorite ships of the show, like in general, that it was nice to see it again.
Yeah, like their relationship, their friendship is special, and it's nice to see it shine through. I agree.
Yeah. All right, well, as you mentioned, we have to talk about winners. Who do you think won this episode?
No one won. Did anyone win? Who does the internet think won?
I think the internet voted very incorrectly. I think they voted based on actors. With one vote, you have a secretary. I don't know who secretary this is referring to.
Pacey's secretary.
Okay. And then with another one vote, you have Grams, Jack, and Dawson. Two votes, you have Jen. Three votes, you have Joey. Four votes, for some inexplicable reason, you have Sadia Shaw. And four votes, you have Pacey.
Wow, Sadia Shaw. I mean, she does. If you were to stack everyone's episode in order, she would probably had a better episode than most of the characters. In that she didn't lose all her money.
True. And she got it.
Get fired.
She got a story out of this.
Yeah. Very unethically.
I mean, I would call Hetson a winner. He got Joey out of his class.
Yeah, but now he has to be her academic advisor.
That's true.
But I think, like, not that I know Hetson particularly well, but I think having Eddie thank him in the way that happened this episode,
yeah,
and having Joey ask him to be her academic advisor, I think he gets some pleasure out of that. I think he enjoys it.
I think so too. I would be okay with calling him a winner, because everyone else had really terrible terrible yeah. episodes.
Yeah, he presumably also held on to his life savings, because presumably he was not invested 100% in the Step Attack.
Yeah. All right, shall we give it to Hetson on his final episode?
Hetson's the winner.
All right, and ratings, let's talk about ratings.
What's the internet got?
On IMDb, out of 113 votes, this episode has a 6.6, which is, I think, the same rating as the last episode.
Interesting.
And then on TV.com, out of 77 votes, this episode has an 8.4, which is actually like middle-ish on the lower side for the range of this season. What do you give it? Just to give you some context, your last episode rating, you gave a 4.5.
Yeah, thank you. Toward the end of this season, context has been really difficult as much as we tried to maintain it this episode. On first watch, I gave it an 8, and I've decided that rating was incorrect.
Okay.
And I think it was part incorrect because it was like too high to begin with because I lost context. But also, just talking about this episode with you, I'm not going to call it a bad episode, but it's like, it makes me sad. Everything about it was sad. So I'm going to give this episode a 7.
Okay.
I'm giving it a 7, but like, honestly, there's not a ton of positive stuff I can say about it now that I'm like thinking over everything. I didn't hate this episode. I think compared to the last episode, it was much better. And you know, it did its job for an episode that, like, I changed my mind. I'm giving this a 6.5.
Oh, okay. You've just talked yourself out of your rating. You know what's interesting? Can I say to you, I've given this episode a 7.
Okay. Okay.
And my my reasoning here is that it's definitely not my favorite episode. I didn't enjoy it that much. However, I feel like it progressed a lot of storylines forward where we haven't gotten that, at least definitely not in the last episode, but it feels like we're moving toward an ending. I think wrapping up so many characters, getting Pacey out of that job, you know, sending Eddie off to Europe, the school year is ending, Joey passed that class. Like, it feels like there's movement toward the ending and there is progress, although it is frustrating to feel like certain characters have kind of stalled in their own personal growth. I really don't like what they did with Jack and David. That does bring the episode down for me. I like that they're kind of setting up a potential conflict between Dawson and Pacey that doesn't have to do with Joey. That's kind of nice. Not that I love that this conflict is happening, but like, at least they're not fighting over a girl, right?
It's the first time for the show.
To me, it's like there are hits and misses, but overall, maybe because I have such a bad taste in my mouth from Love Lines, I'm like, I'll take this episode.
Yeah, like, this is, for an episode that series wraps 5 characters, it's good. If you told me, well, I mean, you did tell me, when you told me earlier in the season, oh, there's one episode where 5 characters are just done afterward, I thought to myself, wow, that sounds like a bad episode. How do they make that work? And honestly, they made it work. And you're right, this episode does do a lot of heavy lifting, story forwarding purposes, in part because the episode directly preceding did zero work. I'm happy calling it a just slightly above average episode.
All right. Are you still sticking with 6.5?
Yeah, I'm still sticking with 6.5. Okay.
The next episode, episode 621, is called Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. What do you think that episode is about?
Well, okay. The Yellow Brick Road. That's The Wizard of Oz. The Wizard of Oz. That was the first film filmed in Technicolor. Technicolor, that's a type of film. I feel like Dawson's gonna buy a bunch of film on his credit cards and then find out that he has no money left, and then they'll fight about it. Or maybe everyone goes home to Cape Side, because that's what The Wizard of Oz is about, right? Going home. One of those. Either the one or the other. Why are you laughing?
Your logic of what this episode is about is so ridiculous.
Am I wrong?
I can't stop laughing.
Tracy's a very easy laugh to get, everyone.
It's just such a ridiculous leap.
There are no gaps in my reasoning.
I just sort of feel like you went from, like, I don't know. The reasonable thing would be like, yeah, they're going home. But the fact that you had to make a leap to buying film.
Dawson says in this episode he's thinking about buying film.
Oh my God. That's so funny.
Everything has a meaning.
Oh God. All right. I have to cut out a lot of my laughing because I'm like crying right now.
You should keep all of it in.
Okay. I'm going to tell you right now, Dawson doesn't buy any foam.
Oh, darn.
Hashtag spoilers for Charles. Okay. Charles?
Yes, Tracy.
I don't know what else to say to you. There's no other way to end this episode. listeners out there, comment on our website, DawsonSpeak.com. Links to all the places you could find us, talk to us, all on the website, DawsonSpeak.com. Charles?
Yes, Tracy.
I'll talk to you next week.
Ultimately, I found your essay on Catch-22 a little bleak.
You found it bleak?